Hello, and welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts in Astoria and the Lower Columbia region. I'm your co-host, Asher Finch. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. We talk about what motivates writers to do the work they do and ask what they've learned through their creative practice. Joining me today is Deb Vanoss. Deb is an Astoria-based writer and has nearly 30 years of experience as a published author in genres ranging from children's and young adult to narrative nonfiction and most recently, historical fiction. Deb is also the founder of 49 Writers, a nonprofit based in Alaska to serve their writing communities, and currently serves on the board of directors at the Writers Guild of Astoria. Okay, welcome Deb to the studio. It is so good to have you here, and it's good to see you somewhere other than a Zoom screen.
Exactly. Great to see you too in person, Asher.
While we're here in town, I say as though it's a novelty, I just miss being here often. You've been living here in Astoria for how long now?
10 years.
Before Astoria, you were living in Alaska?
I was.
And that was for how long?
36 years.
And what brought you there versus your journey here to Astoria?
Well, it's actually tied in with my writing because I started out, as a lot of people do in college, like, you know, I was going to be a lawyer and then no, I was going to be a journalist and then I was just going to be a writer. And my college advisor said, "And how will you support yourself?" And I had no answer for that. And I was had been until recently a teaching college. Mm-hmm. That was way before your time that we had those. And so he said, "Why don't you get an education degree?" So I did. Mm-hmm. And then I was in Minnesota. I didn't want to teach in a small town in Minnesota and just kind of get stuck there. So I took a job in Alaska in a place I'd never heard of before. And that was out in the bush.
Okay.
And just stayed.
So then you taught while you were up in Alaska?
Yes, I taught for 20 years there.
Okay. And what were you teaching?
So in the village schools, I taught everything.
Okay.
And I was a principal teacher when I was 23 years old.
Wild.
Yeah, because it just, there's a history behind that involving court cases, and okay, they had to open a bunch of schools all at once. So people like
throwing people in whoever they could.
That is exactly it. So I did that and then gradually moved into town and onto the road system after mm-hmm. several years. And again, being Alaska, I ended up teaching college and then went back to teaching high school. And then I retired and started writing full time.
Okay, so your full-time writing began after your retirement from teaching.
Correct. At the time, Alaska, because they needed teachers so desperately, had mm-hmm. a retirement like the military, 20 years with full retirement.
And so that was able to kind of give you the freedom and flexibility to pursue writing?
Yes. So it was nice because although I enjoyed teaching, mm-hmm. I already explained, set out to be a writer, and it was supposed to be just a side gig. And so it was nice to know that I could see a time when I would be able to write full time.
Like that light at the end of the tunnel of paying my penance now, if you will, but at the end of it, I'll be able to.
Yeah, not a horrible tunnel or penance. There was a lot of good about teaching. And I ended up teaching creative writing after I started writing full time, which is interesting because I never studied creative writing. But sometimes that works out.
With you having never studied creative writing, right before we went on air, you told me that there was a period of your writing career that you spent working on literary fiction in a journey of a DIY MFA. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
Sure. So as many things in life, it was happenstance. When I lived in Fairbanks for 20 years and I moved to Anchorage. And this was at the time, again, a long time ago, it seems now, about 2008, where blogs were really popular. And I started a writing blog. And another writer who lived in Anchorage, who I did not know, also started a writing blog. And we had kind of similar visions about reaching writers throughout the state and promoting mm-hmm. Alaska's, because there are really some wonderful Alaskan writers. There's a lot of rich material there in so many ways. And so she reached out to me and said, "Hey, we're doing the same thing. Let's do it together." And we did. This opened up a whole world for me because I really, you're going to laugh at this, feel free. I didn't really even know what an MFA was. Mm-hmm. And so when I joined up with this other writer who had an MFA, I got a pretty quick education in what it was. Mm-hmm. I started going to the AWP conferences, which are very big in the MFA world, started presenting at those conferences, and through all this also founded the organization 49 Writers with this same writing friend. Mm-hmm. And so then I thought, well, I don't think I already had a master's degree. I'm not sure I want to go get an MFA. I could see that there were also, you know, it's a culture all of its own, and I wasn't mm-hmm. sure it was a good fit for me. So I thought, why can't I just do it myself? Through 49 Writers, the statewide writing organization we founded, we were able to attract some really top-notch presenters and teachers because people like to come to Alaska. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to study with them just in the workshops we offered and to piggyback on some of the ideas and materials they suggested. And so I thought, I'm just going to do an actual DIY MFA program for myself. I'm an educator.
Yeah.
And you know, as my thesis, I wrote a literary novel.
Yeah. So kind of like an a la carte MFA where you're getting to pick and choose and pull like which workshops you're taking in which genres. But through 49 Writers, you're also giving the rest of your community those same opportunities.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to put it. It was really a give and take. Nice circle.
I think that that's really beautiful, especially in the writing world. You're right, MFAs have their own culture and they have their own set of expectations. I think a lot of writers get really caught in this belief of I can never really make it without this end-all be-all terminal writing degree that may or may not be worth it. I want to talk a little bit more about your co-founding of this organization, 49 Writers, who they are, what they do, what your vision for it was, and now, I mean, you're separated from it physically and linearly time-wise. Did it turn into something that is still there? What does that look like now?
Then it looked like two people with a big dream. And now it looks like our baby grew up and it's out in the world. Andromeda, who co-founded the organization with me, lives in British Columbia now. I live here. Mm-hmm. And for myself especially, less so probably for Andromeda, my writing was Alaska-based. It was mm-hmm. Alaska-centered. So when my husband and I decided to move here, it was something that I considered, like, what will this do to my writing? Like, people knew who I was, not in a big important way, but
the fan base you had knew who you were locale wise.
Exactly. And so I was tapping that rich subject matter mm-hmm. in Alaska that we talked about before. You know, change is good. And I thought, this will help me stretch and grow mm-hmm. and explore projects that I hadn't thought about before. So in that sense, it was really good. As far as the organization now, like I said, it's like the baby grown up and mm-hmm. successful in the world. It's from all appearances thriving. They made us both members for life. So I get their regular newsletter every week. And it's fun for me to see mm-hmm. how much has changed and how it's grown. One of the real places of joy for me is to see how many Native writers have come up and are just really thriving mm-hmm. in a space where they were almost absent when we started.
Historically silenced.
Historically silenced. And in fact, my very first novel, because I lived and worked in Yupik Eskimo villages, was set in a Yupik village about mm-hmm. a boy who was part Yupik and part white. And very consciously in writing it, I wanted my students to be able to see themselves on the page. But I also very consciously knew that ultimately what I wanted, if I could snap my fingers and have anything, mm-hmm. was for them to be able to put themselves on the page, not me. And so it's really wonderful to look back, as you said, almost 30 years when that first novel came out, and know now, like, they're telling their own stories, which is exactly how it should be.
Yeah, that's really phenomenal to see where you were able to take, knowing it wasn't your voice, taking care into that voice, but then using it as a way to give opportunity for those voices to now be able to tell their own stories. Real quick curiosity, the name 49 Writers, where did that come from?
So Andromeda's blog was called 49 Writers and a Moose.
Oh.
And originally her vision was to interview 49 different writers from across the state, and then that would be her blog and she'd be done.
Mm-hmm.
So we just picked that up. Alaska's the 49th state.
Okay.
So that was always a theme. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When you moved to Astoria, you had this literary background with your name being attached to your work in Alaska. Is that why now you also write under the pen name Vanessa Lind? Is that what inspired that? Was it a new audience because of the move? Or are those prior novels under the same name?
Great question. And I think the answer is both in a certain sense, because it talked about like how it was an opportunity for change.
Mm-hmm.
I could be whatever writer I wanted to be if mm-hmm. I chose. So what happens, of course, is you publish. I mean, even if you're not, again, I'm not by any means like a bestseller like mm-hmm. Stephen King or whatever, but you still, people who know what you write expect a certain something from you.
Yes.
Right? So, and I, and it is smart if I'm advising writers, I always say, you know, it's good to pick something and stick with it as mm-hmm. far as a career, which is what I did not do. So I fell into writing for young adults. I wrote a story for a class I was taking as part of my kind of, this was before my DIY MFA, but just mm-hmm. to fill in, when I was still teaching, the instructor for the class said, this, tell the rest of this story and it'll be a young adult novel. And I'm like, okay, I don't really know much about young adult novels, but I'll do that. And I was just fortunate that it was picked up by a New York publisher. So I just started on that path in children's books, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It was very nice when I was doing other things to like help my kids through college and whatnot. It was nice to be able to write, especially the picture books, which were shorter
mm-hmm.
and which are still in print today, which is just amazing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. So anyway, I had all that sort of in my repertoire
mm-hmm.
and then I got to be whatever, you know, I wanted to be when I came here. I had right after we moved here, my narrative nonfiction biography of Kate Carmack, who was the Native woman involved in the Klondike Gold Rush, who was pretty instrumental in it, came out. And then I had another narrative nonfiction project that I started working on like right when I got here, because mm-hmm. it had been percolating for a while. And I'm like, oh, this is my time. I can just start this. So did both of those. But then I was like, I can do all kinds of things. If I use a different name, I won't have audience expectations about, mm-hmm. oh, this should be, she write, but doesn't she write about Alaska? Doesn't she do kids' books or narrative nonfiction? You know, so there wouldn't be all these sort of expectations.
You could have a clean slate on your voice again.
Clean slate. And then I also broke completely from the traditional publishing world.
Okay.
And went to publishing my own work, because by that time the stigma to self-publishing had really mostly worn off. I had a lot of really well-published friends whose work I admired who were publishing their own work, and
mm-hmm.
so I thought, you know, what do I really want to do? What do I really want to write? What do I love? Historical fiction. I love history and I love fiction. So then I just picked a pen name and went down that path.
Stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the self-publishing fits in very well with the DIY MFA and this idea of your own image and your own voice and what writing can mean to you and how you can get that in as many hands as you can.
You've hit it right on the head, because one of the frustrations for me with traditional publishing is that you're so removed from your audience.
Yeah. For those just now tuning in, you're listening to River Writers. I'm Asher Finch for the Writers Guild, speaking with Deb Vanoss about her literary work. Now, in addition to your work as a writer, you also work somewhat as an editor?
I do.
And is that, which of these hats do you wear more often? Which do you prefer? Which is your jam?
My jam is always creative.
Mm-hmm.
So, but editing really has played into that,
mm-hmm.
especially developmental editing, the sort of big picture editing that you do for folks. I feel like it has made my writing so much better over the years.
That's what I was going to ask next, mm-hmm. is did you find this work with other people's writing influencing your own?
Yes, because it makes you think about how, you know, if I'm reading something for someone and I know something's not working, why is it not working? And how can I explain that? Mm-hmm. Even with line edits, I always tell my clients, I never suggest a line edit just because I think it sounds better.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I do think that, I can always explain. If it sounds better, I can explain to you why it is. Because I don't want folks to think, that they're sort of just writing to some nebulous standards that they can't quite pin down. And editing is a relationship too. So, mm-hmm. So I think it has really informed my creative work. But I will always, like, if you give me a choice, I will always write a story. Yeah. Well,
and there's this long-standing saying of the best way to prove you understand something is to be able to teach it and explain it to somebody else. And I think that you really have to understand why you're viewing writing under the lens you are to be able to explain it to your editing clients. And I can see that being a very reciprocal relationship.
Yes. I was just thinking about that this week because I was working with one of my clients who I've worked with a long time, and just, you know, we kind of, in all our pursuits, we grow, but it's a slow upward spiral, mm-hmm. right? I think that's so true in just in life.
Yeah.
And so we relearn lessons. And so I'm kind of helping him relearn, like, you know, show, don't tell, which seems really basic, but it's hard to fall into. And so mm-hmm. it has made me think, even as I've been writing this week, you know, it's really a lot about scene and summary, not just show mm-hmm. and tell. And so just that sort of thing, that awareness, I think, makes us all better writers.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Thank you. So I think we started to touch on it a little bit earlier, but you've been in Astoria for a decade now, and you moved here with your husband after you retired. Why Astoria? Why the coast? Why Oregon?
Oh, it's such a good story. Because it's so random. I have two adult children, wonderful adult children with wonderful families. One's in San Diego, one's in Portland.
Okay.
And my adult children had each just had babies right around the same time,
mm-hmm.
their families. And so my husband and I had gone down to Portland and to San Diego to meet the new little ones. And we got back to Alaska. We were living in our dream home. It was so much work to move into it. We'd only been there a few years. Beautiful view of Denali mm-hmm. from Eagle River, Alaska. And I said, bury me in the backyard. Like, I'm not moving again. But we got home, and my husband he loves maps, took out an atlas and said, we should move to the Oregon coast. And I'm like, where did that come from? We have not talked about the Oregon coast. We were just in Oregon, but we were in Portland. We never went to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
But it just started to make sense for a lot of reasons. So we came down and did a couple camping trips. We tried to stay within a couple hundred miles of Portland because of the family there.
Mm-hmm.
But just kept, so we went all over within a 200 mile radius and camped and just kept coming back to Astoria. It was just the right place. We both love history. So mm-hmm. that's part of it. And then we love the wild ocean and river and all of that.
Well, in talking earlier about how Alaska had this, like, beautiful, rich land to draw from, I find that this area has really similar, like, both the history and I think I've talked quite a bit before about the ocean and the river being able to meet each other. And that relationship, I think, gives a really rich inspiration for a lot of work.
I think so, too. And also, there's, I don't know if I can articulate this properly, but there is something about the wildness, let's say, of a winter storm blowing mm-hmm. in that humbles you, that reminds you that you're not the end all. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important for a writer, because as much as writing is a process for me of self-discovery, and I love that part of it, it's also that I'm not the most important, because if my ego gets in the way, if I get in the way of my characters,
mm-hmm.
Then I ruin it for them.
Yeah. No, that's writing is definitely an egotistical pursuit in a lot of ways, I think.
It can be, yeah. And it's, I think it's been interesting for me working, you know, as a creative writing teacher and then also in editing, and those are relationships too, as I said. And and so, you know, getting to the point of comfort with folks where we can really be honest about, like, what is your motivation for being a writer? Because frankly, I think even though a lot of people are motivated by, I want validation.
Yes. I want my word out there.
Yeah, yeah. And I want a I want a traditional publisher because they'll validate that this is quote unquote good.
Or
right?
Worth it.
Or worthy. And I'm not trying to say that that's necessarily bad. But
And I don't mean bad by the egotistical comment either.
Yeah, yeah.
But from writer to writer here.
But it is a hindrance, I think.
Yeah.
I think it is a hindrance if you are... Because if you're a writer looking for fame and fortune, the chances of your disappointment are very large. So I for me, it's always been about the love of creating. And I think it really is at heart for most people, but this other layer gets in the way. And it if they can learn to pull back that curtain, which I think our landscape helps us do, then their writing is more authentic and richer.
I recently, I'm taking a class right now that's all about the teaching of writing. And a phrase we keep coming back to is that writing is epistemic. And I think that also ties in a lot with this. Like, writing as a process is about discovery and knowledge and learning and self-discovery, but also discovering the world around you and your relationship to it. And the idea of being humbled by that winter storm and that influencing your writing, I think, kind of ties that all back full circle.
Yeah. And as a fiction writer, I mean, one of the things I love is how much my characters teach me about myself.
Yeah.
Because, of course, we're in some ways one and the same, but I can see these things about myself. Something will come out in a character, and I'm like, oh... oh, that flaw. Yeah, I do recognize that.
So you are a fiction writer. Who is your favorite fiction author to read?
Oh, that's a question I don't even know if I can answer. It's the type of question I tend to ask, like, my grandkids, what's your favorite this or that? And then I realize I'm not good at answering that at all. I'm pretty eclectic in my reading, honestly. And I write, I would say one of the big pieces of feedback I get from my readers is that they love that my books are page turners. So I guess just in more in broader terms, like I love riveting fiction. I mean I'll read something dense and important if I have a reason to. But I love to be transported.
Yeah.
I love to be someplace else, even though I love my life. And so I love any writer that can do that for me.
Somewhere to give you another world to escape to a little bit.
Yeah. You know, we use the word escape, but I feel like maybe it's enrich. Like, you know, it's like traveling without leaving your cozy little bed.
Yeah. I love that. An embrace rather than an escape.
Yeah.
And then if anyone listening is looking to find your writing, where can they find you?
Oh, pretty much anywhere. So I write under both names, Deb Vanoss, and then also Vanessa Lind. And that's the one, like, if they're looking for my books that are set in Astoria, it's the historical fiction Vanessa Lind.
Brilliant. And which one of those series is it that's based here?
It's called The Tidewater Chronicles, and it's a... my other historical series are about female spies, which is very fun to write, I have to tell you. And the research is amazing. I'm just wrapping up a series set during the American Revolution. And it's just been fun. And then I did a Civil War series as well. But just for something different, I did these mysteries set in Astoria. I felt like it was a rich setting. And I decided to do dual timeline mysteries, which are very fun. So there's a plot line in the present and there's a plot line in the past, and they intersect eventually. And so they were fun to write. There, I think I did six of them, actually, because I did a little Christmas novella. And one of them has an audiobook that's narrated by a local woman, by the way. Hmm. So they were just fun. And it was also fun to hear from readers. People said, like, I'm planning a trip to Astoria. Like, it sounds so cool.
Because
of your books. Yeah.
Such a reassuring, like, you found the right audience, you found the right people, and now I'm bringing them together.
Yeah. And also that I think you'll relate to as a writer, like the feeling that you, however imperfectly, you were able to put on the page what made this place special to you.
Yes.
You were able to convey
that. You're gifting that, I call it a sacred nature of this area. I consider Astoria to be a very sacred place to me. And I love sharing that with as many people as I can.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. And plus, there's just, when you get into the history, like, there's just...
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah, just amazing things to write about.
Yeah.
So we had shipwrecks, we had seances, all of this in the series. It was just very fun to do all of that.
Oh, brilliant. Do you find that your fiction writing and your nonfiction have equal amounts of research going into them?
That's a really good question. To tell a story on myself, like, writing the literary fiction novel, especially, it was wonderful. It was hard. I found myself, like, just backtracking and starting over so many times. And that's why I ended up doing the narrative nonfiction, because I thought, this has got to be easier.
Was it?
Not that I was looking for easy necessarily. And no, it was not. So it did take a lot of research. And, you know, you have to do the footnotes and you have to document. You have to, fact check everything. So historical fiction for me then was sort of the best of both worlds. Because the problem, if you write literary fiction, and there was the crowd I was running with at the time was like, you just sit down and write and see where it goes. I don't do that anymore. I sit down and really, like, do a lot of actual visual mapping.
You're a plotter, not a pantser.
I am more of that. Yeah. I don't think anybody's strictly one or the other.
No.
But I do like to kind of do my thinking before I, on the page, with lots of mapping, lots of visual, before I actually get going. And so I can do that with historical fiction. But this is something I used to really emphasize with the teaching of writing, because I believe it completely. If you give yourself some constraints as a writer, it actually can open you up creatively. Think about, like, poetic forms.
I was about to say, right? As a poet, I do that a lot with structure and forms. And
yes, you become actually more creative when you have this little bit of restriction to work within. Historical fiction gives you that, because you have to work with the actual events.
With the accuracy of the time.
Yeah. So it's in the small details, but then it's also in the bigger things too, like what actually happened that kind of can help pull all the pieces together. I love that. It's like a little puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's lovely. Okay. Well, thank you, Deb, for being here in the studio with me today. Do you have any final words you want to leave our listeners with?
That's a great question. I would just say, like, if you have any sort of desire to put words on the page and experience life in that way, don't worry about who's going to read it or if it's good. Enjoy the process.